Have you ever seen the California redwoods? If you have, you know these giants are a magnificent sight, but you may not know how close they came to being wiped out altogether. The story of the redwoods is a remarkable tale of natural history, greed, and conservation, a tale told by Greg King in his new book, The Ghost Forest: Racists, Radicals, and Real Estate in the California Redwoods. Greg is an environmental activist and an award-winning journalist whose work has appeared in The Sun, Sierra, Smithsonian, Rolling Stone, Newsweek, Mother Jones, and other publications. Here he is to share five of his key insights.
Hi, I'm Greg King. This year, I published a book called The Ghost Forest: Racists, Radicals, and Real Estate in the California Redwoods. Back in 1986, my life as a reporter drew me unexpectedly into one of the great environmental battles of the era, the fight to save Headwaters Forest. At the time, Headwaters Forest stood at 3,000 acres and was the very last large ancient redwood grove still standing outside of parks. I ended up quitting my reporter's job to help form a ragtag cadre of merry tree sitters and litigants who fought for 15 years to save Headwaters Forest. Later, I began to write this story, which is now contained in The Ghost Forest. There were several instances while I was constructing the book when I came up short. The story seemed somehow untethered, missing an anchor or a core. Only when I drew my gaze backward more than 100 years into the heart of the whole history of redwood logging and protection efforts would a more complete and important story emerge. A story that, as the saying goes, had never been told. This was the story of how redwood lumber contributed to the making of a distinctly American industrial empire, and how redwood was so valuable to industry that the people who controlled the great standing inventories of uncut redwood would go to extraordinary lengths to ensure that these spectacular groves would never be saved as parks. And with just a few small exceptions, the redwoods were not saved. Today, just 80,000 acres of the original ancient redwood ecosystem remain standing in several small island groves. That's just 4% of the world's most celebrated plants. An ecosystem 200 million years old and 2 million acres in size had been eliminated in an ecological instant. How could this happen? Especially when, throughout the 20th century, millions of people from the United States and around the world had clamored for redwood protection. I answer that question and many others in The Ghost Forest, and the answers might surprise you. I'm going to share with you five insights into how, why, and by whose hands all those ancient redwoods fell. Many of these revelations came as a surprise even to me, an investigative journalist who covered timber politics, and someone born and raised among the redwoods. Insight number one. In 2009, I went in search of the history that seemed missing in my early versions of The Ghost Forest. That year, I visited famed Sierra Club activist Martin Litton. Litton was 92 years old at the time, yet he held the room like a ship's captain. He told me about traveling to Washington, D.C. during the 1960s to lobby in favor of legislation then circulating in Congress to create the nation's first Redwood National Park. Halfway into his story, Litton stopped short. He looked off through the room, suddenly deep in thought. Then he told me how strange it was that while he was lobbying in favor of the Redwood National Park bill, representatives from a famous league that had founded in 1917 specifically to save the redwoods were visiting members of Congress to lobby against the bill. This set me on track to investigate the lineage of this heralded organization. What I found was the longest-lasting and the most successful example of an economic phenomenon that today we call greenwashing, a discovery that would turn the entire century-long history of redwood preservation on its head. Another unexpected discovery about this group is that for the first 6 decades of the 20th century, its leadership would include some of the world's most influential white supremacists, some of whose work early on would inform the Third Reich and the Holocaust. Insight number two. When we think of lumber, we think of building houses, right? And when most people think of redwood lumber, they associate the product with the construction of homes throughout the nation. And while redwood was used for home building, that was not its superpower, the amazing attribute that would doom the species to near total exploitation. One night, I worked particularly late in my home office, in thrall to a new and riveting discovery. I emerged into the house in what my wife would call a frenzied state. My hair was on end and my eyes were wide. She asked me what I'd found. "The stave pipes," I said. "The redwood stave pipes changed everything." What's a stave pipe? Imagine a giant tube, up to 16 feet in diameter, made of specially milled redwood lumber and bound by iron bands. The stave pipe was one of several great discoveries I made while researching the Ghost Forest. It turns out that redwood lumber is nearly impervious to rot, allowing redwood to be used in ways that no other wood could be used. For stave pipes and many other conveyances and tanks, including those used for petroleum and chemicals, including cyanide solution, no other lumber would do. By 1920, redwood stave pipes and tanks were stitched across the American West, the nation, and the world. Without redwood lumber, gold mines, farms, cities, and especially hydropower plants, which powered all other industries, could not have expanded as rapidly or as forcefully as they did from the turn of the 20th century through World War II. Without redwood, the empire we today know as California would look much different. Insight number 3. In 1986, when I became a redwood activist, almost every acre of the redwood ecosystem was held by private companies. Yet prior to passage of the 1862 Homestead Act, nearly all of the great redwood forest belonged to the public, standing as if one giant 2-million-acre redwood national park. The Homestead Act, and especially the 1878 Timber and Stone Act, ushered in a forceful tide of corruption that resulted in nearly the entire redwood ecosystem being placed in corporate hands, nearly all of it through fraudulent consolidation of U.S. land grants. The redwood frauds were led by some of the most powerful individuals in the United States, from Washington to Wall Street to the growing city-state of San Francisco. These crimes were never prosecuted, and today's giant redwood lumber companies hold title that remains tainted. Insight number 4. I've always wondered how my ancestors would have felt about my redwood activism. My first name is Thomas. I'm named for my dad, who was named for his dad, who was named for his uncle, who owned one of the largest redwood mills on the Russian River in Sonoma County during the 19th century. That Thomas was named for his grandfather, who'd emigrated from Castleblaney, Ireland to Ontario Province, Canada in 1823 to cut the great pines and oaks of that land for British warships and merchant vessels. Yet I was among a small cadre of redwood tree sitters who camped 150 feet up in redwood trees to keep them from being cut down. We blockaded bulldozers and logging trucks, attended meetings, published bulletins, and contributed to lawsuits against private companies and their regulators at the state of California. We even climbed the Golden Gate Bridge, hanging 250 feet above the roadway to make a point. The thing is, I got into all of this as a reporter. I'd won journalism awards and at one point was offered the editor's position at a California newspaper, a job I turned down once I'd visited one of the very last unprotected redwood groves still standing, a grove that was about to be logged by a Houston company that was fueled by junk bonds. The inescapable call of a truly wild redwood forest is what happened to me while I was busy making other plans. Insight number 5. Our work to save redwoods put us at risk. I live with grim memories of assaults and death threats. In 1990, my two closest friends and colleagues were nearly killed when a pipe bomb exploded in their car. Yet the FBI tried to frame them for, quote, carrying their own bomb. Frame was the word used by their attorney, who in 2002 won a $4.4 million lawsuit against the FBI and the Oakland, California Police Department for violating the activists' civil rights. To this day, neither police agency has conducted an actual investigation into the bombing, and no one has ever been charged in the case. It is a dark and all too personal whodunit, but suspects do exist. The prime suspect in this case might surprise you, and I tell this story in the Ghost Forest. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoy the book.
Thank you, Greg. That was 5 key insights from The Ghost Forest, Racists, Radicals, and Real Estate in the California Redwoods by Greg King. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.